Hello. So we're following up our conversation on Hecate as the torchbearer with an exploration illuminating the triple torchbearers, Hecate, Persephone, and Demeter. And we're going to be focusing a lot on the Homeric hymn to Demeter and also on the rituals at Eleusis as a way of kind of exploring what the torches signified within this very specific story, where Hecate basically plays the role of the mediator, helping Persephone and then helping Demeter. And then when all is said and done, and Persephone is in a union with Hades and she's the queen of the down below, then Hecate becomes the one who helps her return to like everyday life and the regular world at so that the growing season could commence. So this parallels with these rituals in this town outside of Athens known as Eleusis. That was These rituals were really, really important. So the story and the actual like religious activities, these are all intertwined, and there is a lot to really bring into light about these three goddesses and torches, and also the mythology and the religious practice. So this is what we're here to talk about for the next little bit. I don't know. I'm very inspired by this whole business. I've written a whole book, Entering Hecate's Cave, that really is an homage to the story and the rituals. They fascinate me endlessly. This idea of going into a cave to learn the mysteries of life and then being reborn. And I mean, obviously, some of the secrecy that remains around what actually went on at Eleusis is very intriguing, too. You know, I love a good mystery. And I love research, so it's always like, oh, maybe I can find this out. Maybe I can figure this out once and for all. What kind of went on at Eleusis? I love Eleusis and the whole. This is the whole journey, really. I feel it somewhere in my bones, if that makes sense. It's like one of those things, like with the moon. It's like when I look at the moon every night, I feel it in parts of me that aren't exactly physical, that they're deeper than me. And when I think about Hecate, Demeter, and Persephone and going through this ritual cycle at Eleusis, like there is some deeper, mysterious part of me that kind of unlocks a bit. I don't know, Kristen, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I agree with you. And that there's definitely some sort of like, I feel like for me personally, some sort of spiritual ancestry, soul code connection to this that I can't quite put my finger on. And I feel like it might be my life's work to try to make sense of it, right?
Yeah, all right, or just follow it.
Yeah, follow
Like,
it.
who knows
Yeah,
if we'll ever
follow
make
it.
sense of it? And I think that's the meaning of the mysteries. It's like
Right.
we're not supposed to make sense out of everything. We're supposed to let it be a mystery. And just how challenging that is for me, I think, in just in our modern culture too. Like we've like, no, we'll just Google the Eleusinian mysteries and we'll get one web page and that will give us all the answers. But it's like some things are meant to not be explainable. I don't know. May, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I was thinking along the lines of what Kristen said about how it speaks to, like, I mean, whether or not you believe in past lives, I feel like there's that deeper primal part of ourselves that always exists. And I remember the first time I read about the Eleusinian mysteries, I think I was probably in junior high, and I was like, why don't we have something like that? Like, we need something like that. And then I think too about what you're talking about with the mysteries is like, you know, I have a scientific background. I, you know, studied a lot of, you know, physics and chemistry and things like that. And one thing that I always found fascinating was just how I think in the popular mind, science is this thing that is all knowing and has figured everything out and has dissected everything down to like the minutiae. And the more I learned about it, the more mysteries there were. And the more I believed in magic, if that makes sense.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
I was just like, there was so much that I'm like, you know, when you think about it, magnets were magical to, you know, to early people. And, you know, and then we figured out, oh, there's scientific reasons why magnets work the way they do. But it's like everything in life is like that. And I don't think we'll ever figure it all out. And I think that's the beauty of life is that there's always something to like wonder about, and there's always something to like suspend disbelief about and to explore.
I think that's so true. And I think, you know, this aspect of like wonder and awe is so missing in many of our lives. Like just taking that moment to like have the wonder of like the flame in the dark, or the awe of being in nature, or even, you know, kind of the courage to do a crossroads offering and feel that little bit of like fear and also wonder and awe that you're doing something that's really magical and mystical. Maybe that's the real medicine coming through with like exploring Hecate's torches and her connection to these two goddesses is like lighting up wonder and awe. So we have slides. So let's dive into the slides. So I write about all three of these goddesses throughout entering Hecate's cave. And it's really fascinating to me that all three of them are associated with torches. And one thing we wanted to make sure we riffed on, and this picture really reminds me of it, Kristen, because Hecate is front and center in this image in the back with those two torches. And a question that all three of us have talked about before is like, why did Hecate almost uniquely get two torches instead of one? Do you have thoughts?
I do have thoughts. Well, I have a lot of thoughts, but I'll try to zero in on specific thoughts and something I think about a lot, and I want to bring it back to what we were saying earlier. I was thinking when I was listening, what is this innate need to like follow the threads or to like seek the light in the darkness or to follow Hecate's guidance? And I think if sometimes I think like what like on a base level, if you were carrying two torches, what would be the purpose? And I think, well, if you were going to find someone or you were going to lead someone, and the first thing you would do would be like, you know, have a torch for them as well, right? And then I think about like even with like lighting a candle, and I think about the regenerative aspects of fire. And so like I'm pulling out a lighter, and you have the lighter, and then you transfer it, and you're holding two torches. Like, what is, do you know what I'm saying?
I
Like,
do
what?
know. This is really good. So I think you're saying that the second torch is all about like passing the torch. Because we say that now, right? That's a colloquialism that we use, right? Like if it's someone else, someone's turn, we say, well, I'm passing the torch to them. And then don't do in the Olympics, do they still do this? Does anybody know?
Oh, they do. They do.
So it's so interesting. And it's like the two torches. So she can pass the torch to somebody else. So it's like one torch is hers, and then the other torch is for the whoever she's guiding. Because this really links into her, Hecate's role as psychopomp. Because certainly, like in at Eleusis, this kind of business where she's the go-between, you know, in these rituals, you know, Demeter and Persephone are like the stars. But Hecate is like the psychopomp, right? She's the soul guide. And I think those torches are really indicative of that role of hers as psychopomp. lighting the way. And also, yeah, it's like she's passing that torch, even in this image. That's
But
so
there's
cool.
also so much to be said about like the liminality of it, of like her being this central figure that has the torch on either side, right? Like there's such depth of symbolism there.
And it reminds me of the Two of Wands in Tarot, which is a card associated with like the space between in many ways, right? Like holding the that space. So it's definitely there's so much to these torches. So this is the second one that we're recording on our autumn series on Hecate, Demeter, and Persephone. The first one looked at them as the goddesses of the cave, specifically the chthonic aspects. So now we're going deeper into the cave and lighting it up with their illuminating torches and the other ways that they are the light in the darkness. So I love this image. I feel like this is lovely, that this image is just so lovely. So if you are unfamiliar with the myth of Persephone, it basically she's violated by Hades. It's because of a contract or an agreement between Hades and Zeus. Zeus was her dad, Hades was her uncle. It was an ancient Greek myth. And so she ends up, first of all, she's very bereft about this. Hecate comes to help her. And there's also some there's a brokering, like basically a marriage contract that happens. And she ends up going to the underworld to be queen of the underworld for part of the year, which is the fallow part of the year or winter. And then when it's growing season again, she comes back up and Hecate is her guide. So here Hades is, and for the record, Hades turned out to be a decent husband. So here's Hades and there's Persephone and nice chariot, of course. And here's Hecate lighting the way. And I like this image of Hecate because it links to another image that we might be talking about in a bit, which is the running maiden from Eleusis. So this is the story in a nutshell. Persephone gets to come back up. This all is involved in a ritual cycle. So, just to refresh, chthonia, which I have up there in Greek, refers to the underworld, the literally means of the earth, and it's applied to Hecate, Persephone in what we may think are very obvious ways. Hecate is someone, a spirit associated with the liminal and the entrance to the underworld. Persephone, of course, as a chthonic queen. And then Demeter, because of her association with agriculture and harvest and so on. She has a chthonic aspect because in the ancient world, a lot of the storage of harvest crops and so on was actually done underground, so that Hades was associated not only with the afterlife, but also the riches of the world and the bounty of the world. And De Demeter comes in as being chthonic in that way too. So these are known as chthonii theai in connection with their roles at the Eleusinian Mysteries as well, because the Eleusinian Mysteries had them all going through this cycle of going from the regular world into the cave to be reborn. And so there's that aspect as well. So that's how the torches are linked to the chthonic. So this is a votive plaque that depicts the Eleusinian Mysteries that was actually discovered at Eleusis. And you can see the three of them. There's Hecate in the middle with her torch. And this is Persephone. This is probably Demeter. You can see the procession going through there. So this is really interesting to me, this whole story. And we won't get too deep into the origin story of what went on at Eleusis, but basically it was like a three-part ritual that took place over a few days. I should note, and maybe you can talk to this, there were two different times of the year that they did this, right? There were like the minor rituals, and then there was the major one. So when we talk about this big cycle, like I'm referring to the major ones because the minor ones were a little bit different. Do you know anything about this business?
Yeah, the lesser and the greater, and the lesser were kind of more, I believe, and I may be wrong about this. It's been a minute since I've really looked closely at the material, but I believe the lesser ones more had to do with purification, and then the greater ones were this underworld journey.
Which started with purification. So it was like purification, and then there was the next step, and then there was the third step, which was rebirth. So in the rituals that I write about in the Hecate's cave book are inspired by the three parts of the greater mysteries. And this, so this is just kind of an interesting little story, like a retelling of the myth from the late 2000s, and really positions Hecate as grandmother in all of this. So I thought that might be interesting for us to kind of bring in, like this idea, like that the wise woman has to be old, and you know that. To the Greeks, of course, the gods didn't really have an age. There were no, Hecate wasn't a crone to the Greeks or the Romans. Like she was like a basic adult. But something happened along the way where Persephone is forever super young and Demeter is kind of like mother, and Hecate became crone or grandmother. And I find that really fascinating. You don't really think of a grandmother as someone who is super powerful. And I guess in a sense, like the crone is liminal because the crone would be closer to the afterlife. I don't know. I really get like I thought I, personally, I get kind of confused when I think about this a lot. Like why kind of transform Hecate into the crone at this, like in this story, like what point does it serve? I don't know. Does that make sense, Kristen? Kristen, you look
Yeah,
like you
well,
have a thought.
the first thing I think you see me thinking, the first thing I think about is wisdom. Like grandmother would represent wisdom, right?
And is that really what Hecate's torches are all about, right? It's like the illumination, right, of
Illumination.
wisdom and that space between, because wisdom is very liminal. You know, like if you are, like if you don't know something, like there's naivete, and then you can be knowledgeable about something. Like, so you can be ignorant or knowledgeable. But to be knowledgeable doesn't mean you're wise.
Right.
Like, wisdom is admitting that you don't know everything. I don't know, there's something very liminal about wisdom to me.
Yeah, and that makes me think about, the three cauldrons of poesy from Irish tradition, right? And so they have the cauldron of knowledge and they have the cauldron of wisdom. And so I think a lot of people, that's the same thing, but it's not. I mean, to me, knowledge is like, I know a fact. And wisdom is, I have experienced that fact, or it's in my bones, right? Like we, when I was taking massage classes, we would say, get the knowledge in your bones, like, that muscle memory, right? But it's like, it's in my bones now. And that's knowledge. I mean, that's wisdom to me. That's, but knowledge is like, okay, it's in my brain. And wisdom is, it's in my bones, if that makes sense.
That makes so much sense. And I think like linking this back to Eleusis, would it be like going down into the cave and experiencing that rebirth ritual and, you know, being having revealed the mysteries of the universe to you, whatever that may have been, like, wouldn't that be like the font of wisdom?
Yeah. And then when you think about, oh, go ahead, Kristen.
No, I'm just thinking about like these rituals or rites, or even like Persephone's journey or Demeter's story, like they're initiatory journeys, right? When you think about Hecate as mediator, like she like accompanying Demeter and then Persephone in the underworld, like God in her, and like being this sort of medial force, like that would be, she would be the epitome of the wisdom that comes with these initiations and stuff like that. Does that make sense what I'm
Oh, that
saying?
makes so much sense that she's like that spirit that she guides you in. You don't have wisdom, but you follow her because she's leading you towards wisdom. And then if she's bringing you back out of the underworld, well, that's what you're coming back at with is wisdom. After
She
you
is
go,
wisdom.
she is wisdom. And isn't that what illumination, I mean, illumination can be like an aha moment, but isn't like true illumination like the wisdom?
Like really knowing something. And then too, it's like when you think about it, both Demeter and Persephone, there's a lot of immaturity for them at the beginning of this story. And Hecate, when you think about it, she's such an old, I mean, she's an older goddess, like she's a titan. So to think about thinking about it from, because I have been like you, I've been like, why did they make her a crone? When did she become a crone? When did this happen and why? But when you think about it, it makes sense, you know, knowing that she was this ancient energy, this ancient force. And in that sense, it does make sense, even though she was depicted as younger and ageless, it's like she really was a much older entity than either Demeter or Persephone.
And then I think it's like part of my own hang up is that, like, well, a really old woman can't be very powerful physically, but like the power of wisdom kind of transcends age. And I think you really landed on something there that Hecate is ancient, and how do we depict ancient? It's often by like putting age on something. So if she looks old, it helps us connect to the fact that she's much older than the Olympians in this story. I think that's really helpful. What else do we have? So just a little bit more on, let's see if there's anything here that we haven't covered yet. Oh, and this is I love this quote. Richly blessed is the mortal who has seen these rites, but whoever is not an initiate and has no share in them never has an equal portion after death down in the gloomy darkness. So there is something about like just carrying through with our thread of like wisdom and sacred fire. There's something that if you went through these rituals, that it like prepared you better for the afterlife, which is not to kind of Christianize it into like you know, being born again so you can go to heaven kind of business or baptism or whatever. But there is that whole aspect, like you go through these things, you go down below and you experience it, and it better prepares you for the afterlife. So what else is are we saying here? So the central rite of this cult was called the Mysteries, a series of ceremonies of initiation into the secret knowledge of the cult. If they were free of pollution, which is really miasma, all speakers of Greek from anywhere in the world, women and men, adults and children, were eligible for initiation, as were some slaves who worked in the sanctuary. Initiation proceeded in several stages. So this is really, to me, this idea that these rituals were accessible to all. Well, not all, but most. It would have put, like, if you think these were very popular, like I've read statistics about how many people actually went through these rituals, like a lot of people, famous people, poor people. It was a long walk from Athens, but people, like a lot of people went. It would kind of be like, I mean, I don't mean this in a insulting way, but it's kind of like most people we know have gone to Disney World. Poor people, rich people, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying Disney World is the modern Eleusis. I am just saying, you know, like if you think of something in our modern lives that most people will take a journey to. And so if you think like most people experience these things, and this, how Hecate was this liminal figure in these rituals, and how maybe that was really connected to the Hecate suppers that they were doing. You know, you can kind of see, like, when you think, when something is really popular, it's going to influence like other aspects of your life. And so I can kind of see like this web of connectivity between Hecate's role at Eleusis as the mediator and in, you know, the myth around, surrounding this, and these Hecate suppers. And also, like, if you were the one that is the in-between, you're almost like you're the most mysterious figure. Oh, excuse me. So maybe that's where, because I'm always trying to suss out, like, when did Hecate become associated with witchcraft and magic? But you can kind of see, like, if you're going down into this cave, and you know what I mean? I don't know. Does that make sense, May?
Yeah, it's like the torches. She's the guide down into the mysteries, right? And she's, I was actually thinking about this a lot in the context of the epithets that we use for the cave journey, right? In entering Hecate's cave, and how, you know, Chthonia is the earth, and it's that call to like journey, right? That call to go there, to, the call to like go to the cave. And then Lampadios, you know, lights what's in the darkness. Like, the darkness is scary, and she illuminates that, and she gives us the knowledge of what's down there, you know. And then we move into Borbora Forba, who is the transformer. And when you think about like how fire and earth are both really, like, if you bury something, it changes. If you burn something, it changes faster, right? But you know, but it's kind of like this hidden knowledge, this hidden cave journey. Things are hidden from people who aren't initiates. And when you think about, you know, witchcraft and magic, to the average person who hasn't had those mysteries illuminated for them, it is very mysterious. So I can kind of see that connection there, if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just a close-up of this vase, and you can see, again, Hecate with her torches. And then something else, Kristen, I think, I know we've got the Pergamon altar tile slide, but I think in this one, it's a little bit clearer because the image is better. This business of, so if this is, this, we believe that this is Persephone, and this would be Demeter, and this is Hecate. We know for sure this is Hecate in the middle. That Demeter is often featured with like grain of some sort. Mm-hmm. But the grain looks a lot like a torch, and sometimes, like in the Pergamon altar figures, it's difficult to even discern what's what. And so I think there's that aspect of the torches too, being something to do with like the land, with agriculture, with fertility.
You know what it makes me think about? It makes me think about that sort of animating spark, or like life spark, mm-hmm. and then also nourishment, right? That is tied to grain and food.
And Demeter, and so tied to Demeter.
Yeah.
Just to kind of finish off a little bit more about, this is a running maiden. This is a figure that's believed to be Hecate that was found at Eleusis as well. She's believed to be holding two torches, although her arms have been damaged over time. So this idea of, I love this statue. As you know, it's one of my favorite ancient icons, because I love the fluidity, and it feels like that is liminality. And we also wanted just to quickly mention there were other festivals associated with all three of them, of course. But Thesmophoria is a festival of Demeters that was associated with turning the tables so women took over power. So very different in spirit than what went on at Eleusis. And I love this. I really like this passage. Silence, silence, pray to the Thesmophorae. Demeter and Kore, prey to Plutus, Pluto, Hades, Kallidonea, Corotrophis, Hecate, Gay or Gaia, the Earth, Hermes, and the Charites, or the Charites. So it wasn't just at Eleusis that Hecate was really entwined with Demeter and Persephone. So I wanted to make sure we kind of note that as well. And then we wanted to talk a little bit about some of our favorite nymphs, the Lampadae. So the Lampadae's in practical human form were the guides at Eleusis, but they're also, you know, the mythological aspect that these are Hecate's nymphs who run around with their torches, helping Hecate with her work. I want to be a Lampades. So, it, you know, there's so much to this business of like the torchbearers and what the torches meant. And certainly Demeter and Persephone are featured with torches, although within their story, it is really like Hecate is the one. Like, it's almost like Hecate's torch beget their torches, if it makes sense, because mm-hmm. she is older and different and other and not part of the Olympians, that she, like you were saying earlier, Kristen, it's like she passed a torch to them so they could have their own torch and their own story. It's really mm-hmm. interesting. Any thoughts on the nymphs?
Yeah, I also like how they were also psychopomps in the mm-hmm. underworld. And one thing that stands out to me about them is how that they like to play tricks on people. I always love the trickster gods and the trickster, you know, the trickster characters in folk tales and mythology, and they're near and dear to my heart, obviously. But I love the idea of, like, even in the underworld, who where we most of the myths talk about how, you know, it's just monochromatic and like just very, you know, thin, and you know, but here are these Lampades that are bringing like the spark of life, right, and joy in the gloom and doom of the underworld, even running around being a little crazy, having their parties, playing tricks on people, you know, with their torches. And I just love that idea of being like, you know, especially I think about this a lot with my activism work, because activists are often seen as very joyless people, but it's like joy is a form of resistance, right? Like, to just be like, I'm going to be happy, you know, I may be oppressed, or I may be like, you know, in this work that's really hard, but you know, I'm going to find joy and I'm going to live that joy out loud. And, you know, that's just how it's going to be. So I love that they have that aspect to them as well.
Right, being multifaceted like Hecate, and having a bit of fun. I like the idea of having a bit of fun, because in all of the stories about Hecate, she doesn't, there's no trickster vibes to Hecate. I think that's where her consortium with Hermes becomes so important, right? Because he was kind of tricky, whereas Hecate was always very straightforward and doing it. So yeah, let's have a Lampades party, where we go through serious rituals of rebirth and also play tricks on people. and just the Avernali is the Latin name for them, and I just really, really like the name Avernali. Okay, so here's the Pergamon mm-hmm. altar. So this is Hecate, Persephone, and Demeter. So this is, again, another source from antiquity that really links the three of them with their torches. And in this depiction, all three of them have torches in this one, right, Kristen?
Actually, no. No, two. Well, one, I think a dagger. One of them is holding a dagger.
Okay.
And so this is translated in a lot of different ways. Some people say that this is three figures of Hecate. Mm. But I do know that like Persephone's name is inscribed, and like there's, if you can see, look really closely, you can see all these inscriptions. Mm-hmm. And two are holding torches. And this was, I noticed this for the first time the other day. When you read the scholarly papers, you see like they're always referred to as torches, but I was looking really, really closely at one, and I was like, this looks like a bundle of grain. this looks so much more like a bundle of grain than a torch. And that would be the one on the bottom left, if you can
This one?
see what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. And then the one on the right, you can see distinctly, like they're shaped very differently. Like one is grain and one is a torch. But something really interesting about this to me, and like this is a really special thing for me. I have like the Pergamon triangle.
You made it though. You got to be clear. Like, she is so
Yes.
inspired by this ancient altar that she made
Yes.
her own.
Yes. So three epithets on there are Amabusa, Nike, and Phoebe. And you brought this up earlier. Like Phoebe is brightness, Nikea is the darkness. And Amabusa means she who transforms. And so there is something there about the light and the darkness and like the transformative power of fire, right?
Definitely. I don't know. I just love that you are so enchanted by this ancient thing, this ancient object, and that you like you're inspired and you work with it in so many different ways. So fascinating. But you're 100% right. Like when I'm looking at this, so there's kind of like the sketch version of it, and then there's the photo of the actual thing. And you're right, like that looks like wheat. That does not look like a torch to me.
And I do want to say that this isn't the only one. Like there were multiples of
Yeah.
these, and they found fragments of others, and they also found one at Sardis, which was the capital of Lydia. That is very, very similar.
And you know that they're like the triangular shape, of course, speaks to like Triformis, the triple goddess, right? So fascinating.
I just wanted to point out too, the one on the bottom left, who's holding the bundle of grain. It almost looks like she's holding like the rod and line, like Inanna, which is
Yes.
also kind of a way of measuring out like plots of land. So I think that's a really interesting kind of, there's so many overlaps, you know. And I don't know, that just really struck me.
It's can I say one more thing? Like it's such a great mystery, these. I mean, and like it's nobody really knows. Like nobody really knows exactly what they were for. And like I said, you see like triple aspects of Hecate, and you also see like Demeter and Persephone and like Melano and Phoebe and like all of these epithets. And it's just all, I don't know, it's all connected.
All a beautiful mystery. And it's so cool because when I look at this, I'm like, I don't resonate with it probably to the sense that you do, Kristen, but I think I would really like to make one of those. You just put your candle right there in the middle. And then you've got like your scar, like you've got your altar base, and it's like, look, you're good to go. I guess they wouldn't have had a wick. Maybe they wouldn't have had a wick candle. They probably would have had a lamp. And just in conclusion, I think we've touched upon this in some ways, this idea of vigilance, like that torches, like being on the lookout. So being on the lookout for, you know, Hecate can see, like Hecate obviously doesn't need torches because she's a goddess, but it's like this idea of vigilance and how that lights up in our own lives too. Like, how do we shine our own torch through our own life? And our own unique way. And so, in the sense that we light our own way, but also we can light our way, the way for others just by being who we are in the world. I think that's really the takeaway message. You know, for like when I'll use that kind of symbolism of follow Hecate's torches, like into the darkness, so you can find wholeness. And ultimately, I think, like you were saying, Kristen, it's like Hecate has the second torch, so she can pass it to us to light our own way and perhaps light the way for others. So that's been a bit of an exploration on the torch light up fiery aspects of these three goddesses. We're doing their aspects of cleansing and purification, and that kind of side of things, I think, is what we're doing next. So, any final thoughts? I feel like the two of you, like, I feel thoughts percolating in the room.
I just wanted to say, like a something I think about, like the dual aspect of the torches. And you know, it's the hieros pyr, like the holy fire. And this I kind of associate fire like with truth, right? And so I kind of see, like, when I look at images of Hecate and I see Hecate's torches, and I can kind of see like my own reflection, like, and you know what, I'm in my own soul fire reflection to
Right.
like this sacred flame. And so I kind of see like the two torches in that aspect too, like
Love that.
this sacredness reflected in me. And like when you stand in your truth, like that shines outward, and that, like you were just saying, then you become, you know, your own torchbearer and a torchbearer to others.
Oh, that's so wonderful. May, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think about the cave journey a lot. Inanna is another goddess who's very important to me, and the underworld journeys parallel, both in how sometimes we go into this mystery and sometimes we're going in like Inanna went in willingly, right? And with great like pride and was like, I can conquer this. Whereas Persephone was kind of taken, and then Demeter went, out of need, out of a great need. And we all, it just makes me think about how we all have our own underworld journeys and how they manifest in such different ways and how we deal with them in different ways. And unfortunately, some of us have a really hard time coming out of the underworld if we do at all. But when we can, and when we have that help, like we have Hecate, or we have, a trusted advisor or a therapist or, somebody that can shine the light and illuminate, some of the journey that we're going on, how powerful that is, and how we come out of that cave transformed. And I don't want people to miss that, in the myth, right? And in the journey and in the things that we do, getting caught up in what you're doing, but like actually letting that sink in when we're making these journeys, whether you are part of Covina or you're following along in the Hecate's cave book. It's a very powerful thing.
To go intentionally into the cave, which is very, you know, it's kind of like a, it's revisionist history of like, you know, of our own story. Like when we intentionally go in the cave for ritual and magic, it's very different than perhaps when we were victimized in the past and ended up, you know, depressed, anxious, whatever happened, that was an underworld journey, but this is a very different underworld journey.
Yeah,
And
we
the,
get to be the narrator in this one.
yes, we get to own the story. We're the star of the show, with Hecate kind of leading us as that leading spirit who understands wisdom and the darkness and the mysteries and can guide us where we need to go. This is a great conversation. I'm inspired. I've got a lot more thoughts now. So I love this, right? It's like, oh, no, that's the best kind of conversation that leads to more thoughts, right? It's not like, well, it's not, we finished, we have discussed Hecate's torches, we are done for good. It's like, oh, I have more thoughts, so we'll be back. All right, thanks again, everybody. Bye-bye.